Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The McNeil and Parkins Show.
670 The Score in Chicago. Shout out to you guys, McNeil and Parkins. Love you guys.
Afternoons on The Score.
And now, the starting lineup for your world champion Chicago Bulls. A 6'2" guard from Iowa, DJ Armstrong.
Armstrong for three. Oh, they are on fire from downtown.
DJ Armstrong. Pretty feed to DJ Armstrong. Armstrong, sweet shot.
That's what he's done better.
It's a 3-on-1. Armstrong for Pippen. Armstrong on the run. Chambers getting back. The lead for Pippen. Bulls not rushing their shots again, showing the patience. Now Armstrong is open for the three-pointer. And hits it.
Chicago swings it, finds the best three-point shooter in the league. B.J. Armstrong knocks it down.
Marv showing the patience of a championship team.
The Chicago Bulls have three straight championships.
The next guy I want to bring up, in his first day of practice at the old multiplex, they weren't going to let him in because they thought he was too young. They call him the kid, but he's a man, B.J. Armstrong.
And Johnson went down in a collision with Armstrong.
No collision, Marv. B.J. pushed him down. There's a little thing going on here.
B.J. felt that him holding off was a little too hard. He shoved him in the head. There's the push to the ground. That's no accident.
Thanks. God bless all of you. I hope we'll be back here again next year. Thank you.
The McNeil and Parkins Show. Afternoons on The Score.
Beautifully done, Chris Tannehill. Welcome back in. McNeil and Parkins on The Score. We debuted this during the coronavirus lockdown. We're calling these their Scorentine shows here on The Score. Score stories. We bring on a guest just to tell some stories, catch up with them, hopefully put a smile on your face. Who better than a three-time champion to tell some 90s Bulls stories than B.J. Armstrong, who's kind enough to join us now on the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline. B.J., thank you so much for the time. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I was just listening to the intro. It's you know, I forgot about all that, and that was great. I was fun. I was just listening.
What memory in particular did it jog for you there?
Well, you just remember all of the journeys and things you were thinking during that particular time. So, just really fortunate to be around, you know, some great people, to hear the late Johnny Redkerr's call and. And all those times and all those things that we all went through together, we were all so young and everyone was just trying to make a name for themselves and trying to fit in and do their part. And you never know how things are going to come out. But we had a great group of guys, great coaches, you know, great staff. And, you know, we did a lot of special things together up there.
You guys won a championship, I think, BJ, in your second year in the league only, and then that would mean year three and year four as well. Did you, as a young player at the time, do you remember being mindful enough of how fortunate you were to be right place at the right time? Did you get that as a young guy?
Yeah, you know what? You know what? The one thing about getting to the NBA, it's a very humbling experience because you begin to realize how difficult it really is to win, let alone win a championship. You know, just to win a game because, you know, you can't get too high and you can't get too low. So the competition, the level and the understanding of how difficult and the task at hand, you know, in that era, I mean, we were playing against some great teams, the Detroit Pistons and, you know, the Lakers and so forth and so on. There were just so many great teams, great players. So I remember being very mindful of having this opportunity and not wanting to let it squander, because you're at a place where you didn't know if you're ever going to get back there, let alone win three championships. And in the case, you know, the Bulls were able to win six championships in the 90s alone. So it was a great time, great learning experience. But yeah, I was very mindful that, you know what, you want to take advantage of this opportunity.
What was the process like of you guys coming together as a team? Because from the outside looking in, you know, you've got Scotty and Horace, who are rural guys. Michael kind of grows up middle class. He's the prodigy. You're from Detroit. Right. Phil Jackson is, you know, Phil Jackson. What were the challenges of all of those different types of backgrounds coming together?
Well, I think one of the things that really helped me as a young player when I came in was having veterans like Bill Cartwright on the team, having veterans like John Paxson, having veterans like Craig Hodges and Ed Neely and those type of guys. Those were to me, the pillars that allowed me to understand not what I needed to do on the court, but what I needed to do off the court as a young player. So those pros and those veterans, they really helped me to transition to become a pro, to let me know that, you know what, you know, you're young right now, but at some point you're going to be me, and I need you to understand and play your part in this role, because it's taken me a long time to get here talking about the veteran guys and all of us young guys, Scotty, Horace, all of us were young guys saying, hey, we have the rest of our career ahead of us, but before you know it, you'll be a 10, 11-year vet. And those guys kind of gave me the sense of urgency, and in particular, Bill Cartwright, his leadership in the locker room. And he allowed us to self-police ourselves, if you will. And I just spoke to him the other day. I always check in with Bill from time to time because he was a pro's pro. And he was kind of the glue of the team. You know, that's why we gave him the nickname as the teacher. And it was a reason, because he always thought about the group. He was always thinking about the team. But more importantly, he had the respect of the old guys, the young guys, the coaches. And he was a great locker room leader for our group, and helped us to understand and play with that urgency that we needed.
PJ, I want to ask you about one of those guys in particular you mentioned, and the greatness of Jordan and Pippen. I mean, that's known globally, but yes. I think of all the Bulls I've watched over the years, and I'll be 59 this summer, I don't know if there's anybody I admired more than Horace in terms of how much better he made himself and his work with Al Vermeil in the weight room. He was just a skinny, bashful kid when he got here, and he was one of the best big defenders in the league 5 years into it.
Yeah, Horace always had a work ethic. And, you know, Horace was a – you know, you have guys, and you talk about good teammates. Horace was a great teammate because he was the ultimate role player. You know, we all come in this league, we're all trying to find out who we are, what we're going to be in this league. And Horace very quickly understood who he could be. He was a defender. He was a rebounder. And, you know, now looking back on it, Horace was really a positionless player in many regards, because he could switch and guard a Vinnie Johnson. He could guard, guys on the post. He could do a lot of things. And then once he put that little, you know, free throw line jump shot into his game, He was a hard player to defend because you couldn't leave him. So he just really figured out who he was and what he could do, and he played his role, and he was able to win championships. I think he won another one in Los Angeles with the Lakers and had a great run down there in Orlando, and he's a great teammate. So I see Horace from time to time, and he's still Horace, he's still funny, and, he had a phenomenal career.
We're telling stories with B.J. Armstrong here, McNeil and Parkins on the score. You know, you've given out the label of good teammate a couple of times. Would you describe Michael Jordan as a good teammate?
You know, Michael, he was good in his own sense. He was so unique because he was a star. You know, he was a star of stars. And, you know, the one thing that I think, you know, that I always remember and I always respected about him is how he – respected the fact that, you know, he never imposed his superstardom or his who he was as a player. He made sure that he was one of the guys, and he always made sure that when we were on the bus, we played cards. When we were on the plane, we played cards. When whenever there was a time to just hang out with the guys and we could just hang out, he was just one of the guys. So I think he had a better understanding of that before we did, because he always just remained one of the guys. You know, he was Air Jordan, everyone else, but he was just, you know, he was just M, you know, as we called him to us. And he made that very clear that he was one of the guys. He was in for it, and his leadership and things he was able to do. So he was a very unique individual, and had a great understanding and awareness of what he meant to the team, what the team meant to him. And once he figured that out on the court and off of it, it was history.
All right, BJ, so take us inside that card game. What games are we playing? What are the stakes?
Well, I mean, we play all types of games, but I think the funnest game that we would play is we would always, you know, we play blackjack, and the whole team would always play against Michael. You know, he was kind of the house. I always remember that was like everyone on the team was trying to beat him. You know, that was one of the great things that, you know, we would play hard. We would do our thing, but the competitive spirit was always there on everywhere we went. Right. So as soon as we got on the plane, you know, we were there, and it was always the team versus him, and he was the house, and we would always make the rookies shuffle the cards, and we would just play, and we just play for hours. I just remember we wouldn't eat. We wouldn't do anything. We would just play, and everyone was just trying to break the house. And looking back on it, you couldn't break the house, but it was fun trying to do it.
What were the stakes?
Oh, well, the stakes got pretty, you know, they would get pretty high depending on the game. But, you know, we had a lot of fun, a lot of trash talking. But most importantly, I think it was a bonding experience for all of us because everyone participated. You know, it was like one of those things that, you know, you played, and the games were always better when you won. So we had like this, we were in our groove as I think about it. And we had a good flow, a good group of guys that all got along.
It was well known. Phil Jackson took up the practice of giving everybody a book every now and again. Did he ever give you one that resonated with you, and what was it?
I can't remember. He did give us books. He did. And, I can't remember the books that he gave me, but I mean, he would give us books. And back then, you know, when I first came in the league, in those times we were traveling commercial. So I would take my book along, and I remember I would read it, and him and I, we would discuss, you know, from time to time things. But I can't remember, it's been so long now, books, but he definitely would give us books, and wanted to keep our minds, you know, kind of, you know, occupied and doing other things and be aware of our surroundings around us. So, you know, that was always good.
Did you guys think Phil was a little crazy?
You know, I didn't. I personally didn't. I got him, right? And what I got was we're all in this high-pressure, high-demand type of situation where everyone was looking to perform and everyone was expected to perform. But I think Phil, you know, really – had a sense of self. I think Phil had a way of dealing with the problems of the, you know, just the mundane every day that you had to do. You had to go to practice, you played in the games, and, you know, as you get into that routine, and Phil had a way of breaking it up. I mean, I could vividly remember we're in the playoffs versus the Knicks, and we're going to practice. I think we were down 0-1 or 0-2 or something in the series. And whereas we're going to practice, we go take a ferry or go take a trip, and we go to the Statue of Liberty. And he would do things like that just to break up the routine so that we can stay engaged mentally. And I think he had an understanding about mentally making sure that, you know, that he recognizes you. So I think really he just understood, you know, people. More than anything, and I think that's part of being a coach, is understanding people. People come from different places all around the world, and they have different ways of viewing the world. But in the end, if we can find a common denominator, I think we can share in this experience and at least reach our potential, and I think that's what he understood.
We talk with Will Perdue fairly regularly, BJ, and
yeah,
he's
Will,
expressed
–
yeah, he's expressed some disappointment over – he said in the 90s, it was the same every summer. You guys hung around the northern suburbs. You worked out together. You played together. It can't be mandated by the team. But he said, that thing's history. That doesn't happen anymore. Why do you suppose there was a change in terms of the way, I don't know if it's just here in Chicago, but NBA players around the country, why there isn't more team in the summer? It would seem to me it'd be kind of an obvious.
Well, I mean, as you know, being an agent and doing what I'm currently doing now, it seems fairly obvious to me why, you know, that doesn't occur. Well, the main reason that doesn't occur is because when, just take myself, Will Perdue, myself, Horace, we all went to school for four years, and when we came out into the NBA, there wasn't a time where you said, you know what, BJ has 2 or 3 years to develop. BJ had to perform, or else he was going to be traded or moved or cut or what have you. So now when these players, these kids come into the league now, they're like 19 years of age. You know, we have a 3-4 year window now where we're saying, hey, he's developing. So the developmental phase of trying to get them to work with an understanding to perform is a lot different. And, you know, you got to allow these young people to figure out who they are, what they're going to be as they go about this league and as they come into the league. So the developmental era is a lot different than the era that, you know, that I played in or Will played in that era. So I think it makes sense for these guys to go out. They had to get work in the gym. They have to figure out who they're going to be. Are they going to be scorers? Are they going to be defensive players? Are they going to be, you know, distributors, what have you? And then once they can figure that out, they can go about being a pro and figuring out how they can actually contribute to winning, which is the bottom line in this business.
We're talking to BJ Armstrong, 3-time NBA champion with the Bulls here, McNeil and Parkins on the Score. You mentioned that you're an agent now. What are you telling your clients during the NBA being locked down and what's next for them with the coronavirus concerns?
Stay home. You know, that's the main message here is really be responsible and be accountable to playing our part in this, you know, what we have going on here, right? Everyone is affected by this, whether you are an NBA player or, you know, whomever, everyone is affected. So just being responsible, holding yourself accountable or doing what you have to do to play your part in this global community. Because right now we're all, you know, we have to all work as one. And if anything, you know, we have to play our part on this team. So it's going to take us all to be committed to one goal here. And then one goal is to fight this, and we got to fight this one together.
Are you experiencing compliance from your clientele?
Yeah, I think we are because, you know, it's been interesting because not only do I have clients here that play in the NBA, I have clients abroad. So, you know, it's been interesting to see the responses of different countries, different leagues, how players are figuring out how to get home, get back to their loved ones, and also being responsible, right? You know, certain regions or certain areas of the world are more affected than others, but we're all aware of what we have to do and not exposing others and our loved ones and people that we care about. So it's been interesting. It's been just like everyone else. It's been, you know, we're just trying to get the information, trying to get the clarity that we want so that we can return back to our everyday lives as quickly as we can.
Do you think an NBA champion is going to be crowned this year?
That's interesting. You know, in talking to owners and, you know, executives around the league, I mean, I don't know. I know everyone would love to play. I know everyone would love to compete and get back and get back to, you know, their everyday routine. But I really don't know at this particular time. I think the league, I think Adam Silver has come out and said, we're going to do everything we possibly can. But, you know, what that means and health concerns and concerns of all, you know, I think is something that we're all trying to figure out on a day-to-day basis.
All right, back to the stories for just a minute. I wanted to ask you about a particular set of time here. We got a couple more minutes with BJ Armstrong.
Sure.
So Jordan retires, right, and he's going and playing baseball. And then you're an all-star in 94. You're one of the main benefactors of that extra playing time, the extra scoring, and all of that. But I've read that while he's playing baseball, he's calling you to find out stuff about the team. Like, can you talk about your correspondence with Mike while you're playing and having a career year, but he's playing baseball, but still keeping tabs on you guys?
Yeah, I, you know, it's, you know, I've always tried to keep our relationship as when you're a friend, you try to be a good friend. But here it was a unique situation where he retired, right? And there was much going on about why he retired, what happened, what have you. But the one thing that when he announced who he was retiring to the team is, I just said, listen, you have two of the scary things for anyone, right? You have free time now and you have a lot of money. And a lot of money and free time normally equals problems, right? It equals trouble. And I just wanted to make sure to be a good friend. That's all I wanted to do, is be a good friend to him, just like everyone else, and to make sure that we all checked in with him from time to time, whatever he was going to do. So during this process, we would just check in, and he would check in. And I just always thought it was, strange at the time, is that he was still very detailed. I mean, that's the one thing I don't know how many people really know, but Michael was very detailed about the scouting reports and things he would do as he would prepare for the game. And he always wanted to know the scouting reports. And I thought, why does he care? But hey, if we can talk, if we can, discuss certain things, and if that's what we're going to just talk about. But he was very, very interested in what teams were going to do. Then he started asking me about need plays at the end of the games. He wanted to know, just things that, people who don't, if you're just talking basketball, you're just talking about, certain things. But he wanted to know the details of the game. He wanted to know the play calls. He wanted to know the spacing on the floor. He wanted to know all of these things that we would discuss as if we were playing. And I just thought, well, the light's never off. But I knew the light was never going to go off with him, because everyone that knows him, he's going to compete in something. And lo and behold, those conversations turned into one day he shows up and says, hey, what are you doing? Let's go to breakfast and hang out. And as to say, the rest is history, as he eventually did come back. But he was always very intrigued. And I think mentally he stayed engaged into the game, and he continued to watch the game mentally as he was, watching it from afar. But I just think that was the way he thought about it. He always knew physically he had gifts, but mentally he was able to see the game, understand the game, and then go out there and execute it, because he had a huge advantage as an athlete himself, but mentally he was just as strong or stronger than anyone else that played.
One more regarding what we're doing in the absence of a college basketball tournament, BJ. Nobody wearing black, gold, and white to root for this year. No BJ Armstrong, no AC Earl, no Wade Looking Bill. What is your favorite sports movie of all time? We threw 64 sports movies out there, and we're down to the Sweet 16 right now. What's your favorite sports movie?
Well, I would say my favorite fight is The Fish That Saved Pittsburgh. I think that's the name of it. I probably had to say that one. Hoosiers, I think it's a good storyline. Probably the best one I've seen that's made as far as a storyline. The Fish That Saved Pittsburgh. I think I'm going to have to go with that one.
Okay, 1979 was the release date, so that makes sense based on your age. That one's been mentioned a few times. I have only seen that once, and it's been many, many years, and it didn't make the cut. It was on the list of snubs directed by...
What's your cut? Which one did you like?
I would probably have to go with Caddyshack mine. Yeah, Hoosier's very high, too. And we had a debate the other day as to whether Norman Dale was a good coach or not. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. In order to be a great coach, you got to have great players. So I don't know. I'm going to leave it. I'm going to leave it there.
BJ, listen, man, thank you very much for being willing to spend some time with us during these uncertain times. We enjoyed it, and stay safe. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right, you guys be good. Thank you, and stay safe as well.
Thank you, BJ. Take care.
We appreciate it. That's BJ Armstrong with us for our latest edition of Score Stories.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.